This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right, let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, it's a throwback Thursday today. We go back to 1980. One of the more famous cheating scandals in sports, Rosie Ruiz crossing the finish line at the Boston Marathon, except she used a subway. Yeah, easy way to get out of running the 26.2 miles. Nevertheless, we got a throwback Thursday today, and we've also got Good, the Bad, and the Dumb coming up this hour. And we are going to get in through the NBA playoff games. Last night, the Boston Celtics now up 2-0 as Brooklyn blew a 17-point lead last night. Both Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant, they go cold in the second half as Boston prevails. Now, again, as we say all the time, and it keeps being repeated, a series and a series until the home team loses. So we go to the Barclays Center this weekend for games 3 and 4. We'll see what Brooklyn has in store. But right now, it looks like Boston is in control. It's just, look, If you can double team Kevin Durant and he struggles with that, and you've got one of the best defensive teams in the NBA, I'm going to find it hard pressed for Brooklyn to get back in the series, and again, needing to win 4 out of the next 5 games in order to do so. I don't know if they can. Nevertheless, in Toronto, Philadelphia goes up 3-0. They win in overtime. Joel Embiid knocks one down from 3 on an inbound pass with 2.6 seconds remaining. His bucket goes in with 0.8 seconds remaining, and Philadelphia is now up 3-0 against a Toronto team that we keep saying over and over again people liked, but again, Philadelphia is all business. They're going to get Miami or Atlanta in the next round, likely Miami, and I wouldn't want to face this Philadelphia team right now. They're hungry. They're playing really well together. They're distributing the basketball. Tyrese Maxey is on a tear. James Harden fouled out in overtime last night. He had 19 points and 10 assists. Joel Embiid, again, has been fantastic in this postseason. And then the Bulls, they even up their series against the Bucks. But the big concern is how long Chris Middleton is going to be out. He left with an injury for Milwaukee. And with the Chicago Bulls, who don't play Milwaukee all that well, getting a split in Milwaukee in the first 2 games of that series. We'll get into more of that coming up. But we've got the Good, the Bad, and the Dumb coming up on your Throwback Thursday. If you want to hit us up on Twitter, you certainly can. At Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with 2 N's. All right, so what do we got in store for you in the Good, the Bad, and the Dumb? That's next. It's Wake Up Call continues on Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, good. The bad and the dumb time here on a Throwback Thursday. And you know what? Rosie Ruiz in the Boston Marathon is a little good. It's a little, bad. It's a little dumb. But what's the good of the day?
The good of the day. The power of NIL has flexed its muscles, Tony.
All right.
For the first time since 2008, the reigning National Player of the Year in college basketball, Kentucky's Oscar Tshiebwe, will return for another season.
Yeah, I heard about this.
Has it happened since 2008, since Tyler Hansbrough returned to North Carolina?
There's money to be made in the college game, and some people just want to be there just a little longer for whatever reason, and now they can make a little cash.
Money, you say? Yeah, it's to the tune of something around $2 million.
Oh, that's unbelievable.
I mean, I don't know if that's 100% good for a college kid to be earning, but you know what? Hey, Kentucky's returning. Or Tyler, or what's his name? Oscar's returning to Kentucky.
That's great. Listen, again, I'm all for this. I don't know how in the world this is going to work out down the road. I really don't. I don't know if this is – I really don't. I mean, it's good for the players. There's no question about it, right? The transfer portal and NIL is great for the players. And it's a long time coming, and it should have come. That doesn't mean it's good for college basketball. It doesn't mean it's good for college football. It doesn't mean it's good for college athletics. It just means it's good for the players.
Yeah.
We'll see down the road. And maybe that's irrelevant. I mean – sometimes you got to do the right thing at the cost of something that is familiar, right? I mean, you have to, the way these athletes had been getting exploited is now finally they're able to have a little bit of freedom, a lot more freedom than they've ever had before, and it's going to come with a cost. I don't know what this is going to look like.
Oh, maybe the you know, NBA or NFL, you know, you're going to have more fourth-year players.
Yeah, you could have a lot of guys staying seniors. In the league.
I mean, I think there's going to be a period of time where it's almost like a stale draft. Because, you know, you're not going to have these hotshot freshmen who normally were one and done. They just, you know, who especially in basketball, who sat out because they had to or, you know, couldn't play
right.
overseas or, you know, had to do something like that. But
at the same time, if you are getting those guys as juniors and seniors,
yeah.
then eventually those guys are in the draft, and then the next group is in the draft, and then the next group is
right.
in the draft. Like, so you might have a year or two where that's not happening, but eventually it will catch up with itself.
Then you have
but yeah, you won't hear
players.
Like you don't need to hear about a kid, you know, saying at a press conference like, you know, I just want to buy my mom a house. You know what I mean? Like my mom's worked 5 jobs when I was a kid taking care of me, and now I want to take care of her. Now you can stay in college and do exactly that.
I guess
with some of these NIL deals.
The worrisome part will be if it, you know, translates down, you know, trickles into the high school. Like if you're like Arch Manning.
Yeah.
Right? I mean could you as a business and you know, once he makes his announcement of what school he's going to, could you start floating him some money?
Yeah, what is preventing that? I thought I read somewhere that that's not allowed, but I don't understand where that's
maybe it has
not
to be
18. Allowed.
I don't know.
Why can Macaulay Culkin pitch me a product when he was a kid on television and Arch Manning can't? Like in all seriousness, like why can't Peter Billingsley of Christmas Story fame do ads for chocolate syrup? And because that was his big thing, Hershey's chocolate syrup, but Arch Manning can't sell me protein shakes.
Right.
Like, why can't he? Like, so, you know, that's, but here's the other thing too. There was a story I saw on Twitter, so I don't know the validity of it, but there's a story of that was going around that there was a BMW dealer had given one of the basketball recruits a car. And then after their exit in the NCAA tournament, that player announced he was heading to the transfer portal. And that guy drove to the airport to get that car. That he was just taking it back. And I said, this is the danger of NIL. He was very angry and he's going to take it out on somebody. And that guy is usually going to be the coach. That's where I worry for these coaches. They're like, I have no control over these kids in the transfer portal and all that. I'm sorry you gave a kid a BMW and now he's leaving, but that's your gamble. That's your price. So it's going to be interesting in the next couple of years. We need a few years to see how it's going to play out.
But yeah.
Yeah, good for Oscar Swebe to stay at Kentucky and make his money. That's a good job. All right, what's the bat of the day?
The bat of the day might be a little dumb as well.
Okay.
But did you know the Capitol had to be evacuated yesterday?
I saw this.
The U.S. Capitol
had
to be evacuated?
Explain why.
Because there was an unidentified aircraft flying overhead. So Capitol Police sent out announcements and mandatory evacuation, and they evacuated the Capitol.
Okay. I know nothing about aviation. I do not know how to fly a plane. I don't know how to put together a flight log. I don't know how to talk to air traffic controllers. When I hear recordings of air traffic controllers talking to pilots, it is a foreign language.
True.
I have no idea what they're saying. I don't even know how air traffic control works. But I do know you cannot fly an unidentified plane anywhere near the capital of the United States.
Well, it wasn't really unidentified.
Or unannounced?
It was unannounced. It was, hey, we didn't include the Capitol Police in the loop.
I gotcha.
Basically, because the unidentified plane is actually was a military plane that the Army Golden Knights use.
Okay, so the Army knew about this, but they didn't notify the right personnel within the Capitol that they were flying.
They didn't notify the Capitol Police, basically.
Again, go ahead.
The Army Golden Knights is a parachute team. And the reason why they were flying overhead was because they were getting ready to do a demonstration ahead of the Nationals game.
Got it. Okay, so they were going to do some parachuters at the Nationals
game. Yeah, where they all jump out of a plane. People were posting video on TikTok like, you know, as if Washington, D.C. was being invaded like it was Red Dawn. Saying,
again!
There's parachuters off in the distance. Look at them coming down.
Isn't this just common practice, though, in Washington, where you just, like, if you're going to fly a plane, you let everybody know? It's not everybody. Like flying a plane in Seattle. It's Washington. They're a little iffy on those kind of things.
Right.
Like, they're a little concerned. Like, you know.
Yeah, I mean, if this plane was flying around World Trade, was it Freedom Tower? What's it called now? Freedom Tower?
Freedom Tower, yeah.
If a plane was flying around Freedom Tower, just kept circling above it, people in New York might get a little skittish.
Right.
Now, call it PTSD.
Exactly. I mean, especially, and again, Washington, D.C. saw its share of that.
Yes.
So, yeah. So, yikes. Yeah, just let everybody know.
Yeah.
There's got to be a checklist out there.
Can you imagine being in the Capitol and all you're hearing is a recording saying, evacuate now, aircraft intrusion.
Oh, in these times? In what's going on now?
Around the world, yeah.
I mean, come on.
I couldn't get out fast enough.
Seriously. I mean, it is, I can't imagine the fear that would overtake if you felt like that was a real threat. You know, if you really thought that was happening. All right, what's the dumb of the day then?
The dumb of the day isn't really dumb as it is just insane and just crazy stupid.
Right.
Nick Saban claims his players since 2007 have earned in the NFL, you ready for it?
Yeah.
$1.7 billion.
Wait a minute. All the players that he has sent to the NFL?
The players he has sent to the NFL, which is about well over 100, like I think it was like 127 or something like that, have earned since 2007 $1.7 billion.
That's crazy.
Dollars.
He had somebody look that up and put that calculation together?
Yeah.
So either two things happened. Either one, Saban told somebody on the Alabama staff, hey, why don't you all look up the salaries of all the guys that play the NFL since coming here to Alabama? Or two, some eager beaver in the communications department went, coach, I got some news for you. I just took it upon myself to calculate all the money that our players have gotten since you arrived here in Tuscaloosa, and you'll never believe the amount. And he went, what? $1.6 billion?
$1.7 billion.
And he went,
billion with the B.
I'm going to tell that story at the next Crimson Tide gathering.
Well, I mean, just look at somebody.
That's great.
Somebody looked at 2013 alone, right? Nine players, $51.8 million.
That's one of the reasons he's a recruiting factory.
I mean, that's why he doesn't have to pitch Alabama anymore, doesn't he?
No.
He just goes and says, here, this is what I got.
What if a player goes, coach, I don't really care what I get paid in the future. I want to know what I get paid now.
Well, that could be an issue now.
Right?
I don't know.
That's great, coach. And in 3 years, I get to go make some money. But I need a little Dreamland barbecue money, if you know what I mean.
Is there enough businesses in Tuscaloosa?
Yeah, exactly.
To fund that? Probably. Because the other issue, too, Alabama's a national viewed team. So, I mean, you know, any company could really say, oh, let's pay attention to Alabama.
Yeah, sure. You can make a lot of money.
But $1.7 billion.
$1.7 billion is no joke, though, for for 15 years of coaching at Alabama.
Yeah, ever since he's been there. His players.
That's great.
Since 2007.
That's great. If I was him, I'd have one of those, like, national debt boards, you know, like you see on, like, you know, those where, like, the national debt is $30 trillion and it just keeps ticking up and up. I want it to be like a Jerry Lewis telethon tote board. Like, I would have it in my office, and every contract that gets written by my former players, it just continues to go up.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Does he get that thermometer that you see at fundraisers?
Yeah. I mean, seriously. You
know, like, we're kind of go to $3 billion. Let's see how quickly we get to $3 billion.
Exactly. And you need like, somebody to come in every day, like, hit a gong or something, like that you see in sales pits where they make
bell.
A sale. Ring that bell. We got another signed deal, right? Nick Saban just has that big, huge tote board on the back of his. Let's go. $1.82 billion. And everybody celebrates and loses their minds.
Balloons and confetti right. fall.
Everything
from the
comes down. Yeah, exactly. Bum, 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 bum. And then they go back to the axe.
Big Al runs through the office waving the Alabama flag.
Exactly, right? Yeah, that's exactly right. Every single time a new contract is signed by one of his former players. That'd be great. And if you were just a recruit there and you just kind of saw that, you'd be like, oh my God.
See, if I was Alabama, I wouldn't invite them to any more football games.
Exactly.
I would say, you know what? Why, you know, hold off. Come to our school draft day.
Yeah, I know, exactly.
And that's where the real party's at. This is why you want to come to the school. It's not to see us, you know, beat a lower tier team like, you know, Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
Sorry, Vandy.
Yeah, just celebrate the success of the draft
Yeah. Place. Just have them come, you know, last week in April, midweek in, you know, just say, "Hey, you're going to hang out with us for 4 days. This is where I want you. This is what I want you to see what could be you in a couple of years."
Do you think he pulls recruits aside and goes, "Hey, you think that piece of crap in Oxford, Lane Kiffin, is doing this?"
Yeah.
No chance.
No. Yeah. What's he got, like one draftee? Come on.
Yeah, exactly. Come on. What are we talking about here? Please. Yeah. So you want to go up to Oxford? Go ahead. But look up at the board here. $1.7 billion worth of NFL money has come through the Crimson Tide locker room.
I average like 10 a season.
Exactly.
10 a draft. That's
Lane Kiffin got a tote board?
And I, you know, that's not even, I'm not even counting the undrafted. They all get to play too. And that's just
Lincoln
NFL.
Riley.
I'm sure Alabama, you know, sending people to the CFL. Now you got the XFL where they can earn a little cash.
Exactly.
The USFL.
Nick Saban, man. He's great.
$1.7 billion.
Take our cue, man. Take our cue. We got a great idea. A little behind your desk total tote board. That's what you need. You'll love it.
Parents going up to him like, "Now, why should my son choose your school?"
Yeah.
Well, if you look at this graph behind me.
He's looking at his like assistants. How many zeros are in 1 point? I don't even count. I can't even count how many zeros are in 1.8 billion. Stop it. This is great. That's a great number. I'm not going to get over that for a while. It might settle with me for a while.
It's unreal.
It is really. It really is crazy. It really is amazing. All right, that's the good, the bad, the dumb. It's a throwback Thursday. It's Wake Up Call. We'll get into the NBA playoffs coming up as we continue along on Sports Map Radio.
Friday night, I crashed your This car. Is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. 1980, Rosie Ruiz on this date. Billy Joel. I don't think we do a lot of Billy Joel on a throwback.
We don't get an opportunity
to. We don't get a lot of Billy Joel. Rosie Ruiz cheats at the Boston Marathon on this date. We were going to also do Geraldo Rivera opening up Al Capone's vault.
Yep.
That was 86, right?
Yes, and revealing all the treasures.
Yeah. Why? I was too young. Why was that a big deal? What did they think they were going to find inside? Dead body parts?
I think it was
money?
More hype than anything.
Like, what did they think was in Al Capone's vault that they couldn't wait, had to be on network television?
I mean, let's assume this, right? Let's say there's papers in there.
Right.
Yeah. So now you're going to read these papers live on air?
Exactly.
Because it was a live event. It was, you know, hey, stay tuned. Coming up on Friday, you know, type of thing. And you knew all week long that this was going to happen.
So I'm going to tell you right now.
I really don't know what the end game was for it.
I'm going to tell you right now. The United States government knew that vault was empty.
Oh,
there was no way they were going to let that be opened, not knowing what was inside.
I guarantee they're the ones who cleaned it out.
Right. Oh, absolutely. There was probably, back in those days, there was probably inner workings with guys like him from the government standpoint on, you know, hey, we got a little sweetheart deal for you if you do this, this. They got him on tax evasion. By the way, Al Capone is a major, like, Al Capone should be a warning to every United States citizen to make sure you pay your taxes. Capone had a lot of people killed, and they got him on tax evasion. Let that settle for a second. They couldn't get him in prison for any of the murders and all the bribery and everything he did in the city of Chicago as the king of Chicago. They couldn't get him on anything, but they found a ledger book where he didn't pay his income taxes on money he received and kept from the government. And they threw him in Alcatraz for that.
Yeah.
They're not playing.
It's a hardened law right there.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not messing around. But I'm telling you, you always find out these stories about how either the state government, city government, national government, whatever, they work with deals with these guys. They work with mob bosses. They work out sweet, you know, you make sure you take out this, you take out this industry, you do this, and we'll look away on this, this, and this. And I guarantee you that the United, even in 1986 when he's long dead, they still don't want, they knew exactly that vault was empty. I'm not going to let them open it up on national TV with all the possible secrets that they probably had with him. But that was also on this date, so that was a possible throwback Thursday. And then there was a sad one. Prince died on this date, 2016, I think? We had a number to choose from. We went Rosie Ruiz because it was a fun story. So there you go. Real quick, I want to get to the NBA playoffs coming up next segment, so I don't want to give it enough time. We're talking about NIL and college athletics. I don't know if you saw this story. John Daly Jr. got a Hooters deal. He's a college golfer in Arkansas.
Yeah.
Didn't you see that? So John Daly, his father, has been associated with Hooters for a long time. Long time. In more ways than one. But he used to go to the Masters. And here's the thing. He used to go to the Masters.
I think he still does do this.
You think he still does? He's not a participant. And he goes to the local Hooters, signs autographs, and meets people.
Because isn't there one right outside?
Right down the road.
The gates?
Yeah, it's not that far. So he goes down there, he signs autographs. And as all of you probably know, John Daly is still to this day, despite all of his problems, I mean, and he's got a boatload of problems, is one of the most popular athletes we have in this country.
Yeah.
They will line up forever to get a picture and a signature with John Daly. He is huge. He is still huge.
He has a certain following.
He definitely has a certain following. And he always has. And his son, JD, as he is called, John Daly, I think he's John Daly the second. I mean, John Daly the third, I mean. I think John was named after a dad, but I'm not sure. Nevertheless, his son is a very, very talented golfer, very good golfer. Has been very good since he was 10. Now he's a freshman at Arkansas, plays at his dad's alma mater. And so his dad, using the connections, got Lil Junior a Hooters membership, a Hooters sponsorship. So there's John Daly's kid on a golf course holding a driver with two hot Hooters babes next to him, pitching wings. That's how that's going to work. Well played. NIL. This is going to be fantastic. Remember we talked about this remember when we were going through this and we were like, okay, there's going to be some restrictions on this, right? Like strip clubs, gambling, like things like that, like alcohol, places like that. This Hooters is not quite crossing the line yet, right? It's still not there.
No, it's a restaurant.
It's a fine place. It's a fine establishment. So, but I mean, John Daly's kid gets to go to Hooters and eat for free.
They have decent chicken wings.
Love those chicken wings.
But it's not their fault that they have a certain type of waitress.
Right. Exactly. When I was working in Colorado Springs, we went to Tucson for spring training to do the Rockies. We went for a week. We went to a Hooters restaurant, and my producer ordered wings, and he wanted the boneless wings. And the waitress came out and gave him his food, but it was kids' chicken tenders with like the sauce on it. And he said, "These aren't boneless wings; they're kids' chicken tenders." She goes, "Yeah, we went out of them, so they thought that this would work." And he said to her, "No, this isn't what I wanted. I'm not going to eat this." And so she takes it back, and then we don't see the waitress again. And we called down another waitress, and we're like, "Yeah, our waitress has disappeared, and he hasn't gotten his food." Trying to get boneless wings. I know you don't have them, but he's not even putting in a new order. And she goes, "Hold on one second. Let me go find her." And she comes back and she goes, "Oh, I'm sorry. She's in the back room crying." He made her cry over the fact
that
he made this waitress cry because he said he didn't want kids' chicken tenders doused in buffalo sauce. And if you don't have boneless wings, he'll order something else. Needless to say, I left her a good tip.
What a bully.
I know. I told him. I kidded him about that for like a month.
Oh, you should have gone longer.
I should have gone longer. Yeah. I said, Kip, the Hooters waitress cried. Exactly. Making Hooters waitresses cry all over Arizona. All right, Sports Map Radio. We'll talk NBA playoffs next.
Any way you want it, just the way you need it. Any way you want it.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us on a Throwback Thursday. By the way, real quick, man, you were asking about Caddyshack. Is this the song Rodney Dangerfield plays?
I think
out of his bag?
Yeah.
Remember he had the ultimate golf bag that had like all sorts of cool stuff, and I think he hit the music. Came with like a stereo.
Right, I think you're right.
I think he played this on the golf course. 1980 on a Throwback Thursday. NBA playoffs last night. Man, I'll tell you right now, I don't feel bad for any team. I'm past this. Like, I don't have sympathy for any basketball team. Like, you make it to the playoffs, earn it. Go out there and get it. You get swept. I couldn't care less. But what a dagger the Philadelphia 76ers threw at Toronto last night. What a dagger. Not only do they make a three with 0.8 seconds remaining in overtime to win it, it's from Joel Embiid from downtown knocking it down. You ever wonder, I was thinking about this last night, do you ever wonder how a basketball player sees the court, the rim, the ball when he's 7 feet tall? Like how easy the game must feel to him in terms of the obstacle. Like I'm 5'9 and a half, right? I get a basketball, kind of looking up at the rim. I got to throw it at a certain arc. That's why I stink at basketball. It's not because I'm 5'9 and have plenty of 5'9 players are really good. I got no depth perception. I'm terrible at basketball. I am so terrible at basketball. It's laughable. It's laughable. And I tried. Lord knows I tried when I was young, but I stink at it. But if I was 7 foot tall, think about like how the basketball would feel in my hand. Like how small it would feel in my hand if I had gigantic 7 foot center hands. And how the rim would be only just a few feet high, just almost eye level practically. It's like, you know, when you're a kid and you get those small basketball little indoor games that you can put up a little hoop, like a little hoop in your office or something, and how easy it is. Joel Embiid knocked that down like nothing. Like nothing.
As if he was Steph Curry and takes shots from there all the time.
Like seriously, 2.6 seconds left, Doc Rivers calls a timeout. They're going to inbound the basketball, right? And Doc Rivers really heads up coaching right there because he kind of knew what was going down. And then they get the ball to Embiid, and Embiid just takes shot. There it is. Boof. Knocking down 0.8 seconds remaining, and the Sixers go on to win 104-101. And the Sixers now up 3-0 in a series many, many, many like people, including our own Lee Ellis, like the Toronto Raptors. I got to admit, so did I. I actually did. I actually like the Raptors in the series, but not anymore. I mean, like Philadelphia the whole way if they keep playing like this. I mean, Tyrese Maxey was great last night. I mean, James Harden distributing the basketball is exactly what you want him to do until he fouled out late. Embiid finished with 13 rebounds and 33 points, including 3 three-pointers, including the one that I just mentioned was a game winner. That's it. Philadelphia needs one more win, and they're wrapping this up, and they'll wait the Miami Heat-Atlanta Hawks series. And I love the way Philadelphia's playing right now. Really like them. They look sharp. Chicago Bulls evened up their series with Milwaukee 114-110.
Look, I mean, Sixers. They're looking unbeatable.
They really are. They really are playing exactly the way that they should be playing in the playoffs.
Yeah.
There's a way this Harden-Embiid thing is supposed to work, and it is working right now exactly the way it should be designed. Again, Maxey's playing fantastic. He's getting, of course, his opportunities. You've got the when James Harden is not wanting a share of a 30-point night, it's better for the Sixers if that's the case. It's better for the Sixers. He can get Embiid the basketball in other areas of the court that other point guards on that team could not do in the past. So Embiid, you want him up high, you want him down. Like Harden is such a threat to score and penetrate that you can get Embiid in any position you want on the basketball court, and Harden can get him the ball. So wherever Embiid wants to be, he's not going to be locked into a certain area of the court because the point guards of the past were not capable of doing the same things that James Harden was able to do. See, James Harden as a point guard requires one of your best defenders not just to prevent him from penetrating, but prevent him from scoring. I mean, Harden can go off for 30 points if you let him. But Embiid, the balance between those two is working exactly the way it was designed. When Harden got to Philadelphia, and if you're a basketball savant and you said, how would that work perfectly? Philadelphia and Doc Rivers seem to have gotten that perfectly. They don't mind the physicality of Toronto when Nick Nurse is trying to go at them hard. Again, they're getting great production from around their lineup. They really look great. The other game last night, Chicago evened up their series with Milwaukee, but Chris Middleton left the game with a knee injury. This is the second major. I mean, Middleton's not a star, but he's a star. He's not a superstar. He's not Steph Curry or anything, but he's a major player in the postseason. He's a star. This is him and Devin Booker of the Phoenix Suns going down early, and we don't know exactly when they'll be available. What's going down with either one of them? This could change this series. Now, I still think Milwaukee wins it. I think when you have Giannis, Middleton's very, very important. But when you have Giannis and a Chicago Bulls team that you know you can beat, is DeMar DeRozan going to put up 41 every night? He better, because that's how Chicago is going to win this series. He better. But Chris Middleton being out is a big deal to this Bucks team. I still think they'll win this series, but it might take a lot longer, and it might be a little bit more stressful. But the other game last night, of course, was Boston. And they beat Brooklyn 114-107. Two takeaways out of that game. One, the Celtics came back from a 17-point deficit. They outscored Brooklyn by 12 in the fourth quarter to get the win. Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant went ice cold in the second half. I mean, ice cold in the second half. And it's a lot to do with them getting contested. Durant was double teamed a lot last night. Boston's defense is fantastic. But boy, I'll tell you, Kyrie Irving was 4 of 13 from the floor. 4 of 13, finishing with just 10 points. Now, Durant had 27, but he was 4 of 17. Most of his points came at the free throw line last night. Again, I don't look at this series the way I would look at another 2-0 set. Right? For example, Miami, again, it's a little hard with Miami and Atlanta because Atlanta's an 8 seed and Miami's a 1 seed, so it's not like it's an even series. And we know that Boston being a 2 and Brooklyn being a 7, Brooklyn is better than a 7. But that being said, Miami's up 2-0 against Atlanta. I don't think Atlanta has any chance of getting back in this series. I honestly don't. I don't. You've got the Brooklyn Nets who lose both games in Boston. And if you just kind of take away how they lost those games, if you pull it back a little bit, you've got a Brooklyn team that lost at the buzzer, right, in game one, and then lost a 17-point lead in the fourth quarter, or a 17-point lead in the second half, late in the second half. I think they were down 12 at the start of the it was 17. And so you have a Brooklyn team that was up 17 late and lost that lead. Now, again, I'm giving credit to the Celtics here. I want to give credit to the Celtics. They came back from a 17-point deficit. They also got the beautiful, beautiful layup by Jason Tatum in game one. But Brooklyn's going back to the Barclays Center knowing that they can play this team, like knowing that they've done things right. They've done enough things right. The big question in this series, to me, Ime Udoka is coaching great for Boston. Great. The way they're defensively set up to contain Kevin Durant, he was like 1 for 12 on the double team, right? That exactly whether you want to draw up a defense when you are trying to basically limit Kevin Durant from going off for 50 points, right? And then Kyrie, same kind of thing. Defensively, they're really locking down those two players like he did in the second half when they really needed to. But Steve Nash has to do a better job coaching this Brooklyn team. This was the biggest complaint when they hired Steve Nash. This is a championship team. The Brooklyn Nets are built to win a championship. They have two major stars on their team. At one point, they had three major stars on their team. Now they have two. They're still built to win a championship. You still need the right coach, right? You go back in the NBA, right? And you talk about Phil Jackson, for example, who coached the Bulls, obviously, and then Kobe and the Lakers. And everybody sort of thinks Phil Jackson just rolled out a lineup. But everybody who was associated with the Bulls back in the day knows that's not true. And anybody associated with the Lakers knows that's not true, right? You need the right coach. And Phil Jackson was the right coach. Did he benefit from having superstars? Absolutely. But the idea that I could coach the Bulls to six championships is ludicrous. It's crazy. It's dumb. There are good NBA coaches that couldn't have done that. Phil Jackson was the right coach for that team. He was the right coach for the Lakers. Is Steve Nash the right coach for Brooklyn? They may not get out of this series. And when they go into the offseason, if your window of time with these two stars, and maybe you can get one more into this lineup in some way, is Steve Nash capable of coaching this team? You need to manage minutes. You need to set offenses up. You need to have defensive game plans. These are not going to come from the players themselves. This isn't pickup basketball. This is the NBA. This isn't just roll out guys and hope for the best. Like, you need a strategy. Is Steve Nash capable of giving Brooklyn a strategy? Because so far in this series, he has not. Right? He has not. He did not counter whatsoever when they were struggling with those two players. You can't let Boston, even at home, get back from a 17-point deficit in the fourth quarter. You can't. You've got too much talent on that team. And I'm not talking about Kyrie and Kevin Durant. I'm talking about other guys on this team. Bruce Brown is an outstanding player. You still have Andre Drummond, who was held to 5 points last night, right? You've got some. You got Nick Claxton coming off the bench, and he was useless in 23 minutes. You've got to find a way to get that ball in the hoop. If you've got two guys, your stars are getting double-teamed and defensive lockdowns, other guys are going to have to step up. I don't think Steve Nash is capable of getting this team emotionally and strategically ready for Boston in games 3 and 4 in Brooklyn. And Boston only needs a split. They only need a split at the Barclays Center. And then they'll wrap this bad boy up. Now, Brooklyn can get two, then it's a best 2 out of 3, and it's game on, all that.
So if you're Brooklyn, because there's rumors, you know, they're floating out there like there always is. Does Ben Simmons play game 4?
Yeah, I know.
But if you're Brooklyn, do you want him to?
Okay, I'll tell you this. I have a problem with. All right, let me take a break when we come back. I'll answer that question because I had a thought about Ben Simmons last night when I was watching Boston come back in that game. I'll give it to you next. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
Got this. In pocket.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, it's a throwback Thursday. We're going back to 1980. Rosie Ruiz and the Boston Marathon, one of the biggest cheating scandals in sports. Still popular to even to this day. You want to know what else is popular? Free all deep penetrating oil, because it delivers 3 times more lubricant, so it takes less spray, less torque, less time than any of the penetrating oil that gets the job done. You know you got rusted bolts and nuts. You've got axle nut removal, corroded U-bolts, pillow blocks, universal rusted joints, you name it. Free all deep penetrating oil can help you. You can find it on the shelves at AutoZone, O'Reilly, Napa, and also select Walmart stores. We think you're going to like it. It's body shop safe, which means it's safe on paint, plastic parts, and it's silicone free. Free all deep penetrating oil. Again, 3 times more lubricant, so it takes less time, less spray, less torque to get that job done. Free all deep penetrating oil. All right, you bring up Ben Simmons and, well, you know, coming back, you know, getting back into this series at some point. I agree. I think it's a big risk. The last time we saw Ben Simmons on a basketball court, he was failing miserably in the playoffs. Didn't want to go to the free throw line, passing up shots that were easy dunks, so he didn't have to dunk it. I mean, he was really not in the right mental state in terms of being a contributor in the postseason for the Philadelphia 76ers last year. So, do you bring him back the first time in a Brooklyn uniform in a situation where the team absolutely needs everybody to participate because their back's against the wall? I don't think so. I don't. But I was thinking, I couldn't help but process last night. And I was with a friend. We were having a dinner because my wife and daughter were out last night. So I thought, yeah, my buddy and I would go grab a bite to eat. I thought to myself, I was watching the Celtics come back. What if Ben Simmons was in the game to, and he performs 1 or 2 stops down the stretch. Because he's a really good defensive player. Offensively, liability. Defensively, he's a very good player. He's one of the top defensive players in the league. If you got him in the game and he made one or two stops when you're up 17 and the lead is whittling away, you could almost justify the other side of the court, right? You could almost justify what you don't get from him offensively. But I just think it's too big of a gamble, even though the temptation is there. Like, man, if we could get a stopper into this lineup at some point, that would be great for us. But I just think he's too much. You can't. All of the things that happened to him from that moment last year in the postseason to where we are now, where he didn't want to play for them, had all those problems with Philadelphia, not showing up, all that, getting traded, getting to Brooklyn, back issues. He hasn't really developed any sort of rapport with his team. I mean, remember that one game the Nets won and they won it in Philadelphia, and all they talked about was how they were winning it for Ben Simmons? Remember that game? And you and I said, that's a bunch of crap. Fine. You want to support Ben. He's getting booed and he's your brother and all that. There was no way Kevin Durant and those guys went on that basketball court and when they were thinking about Ben Simmons while they were shooting up shots. Like, I don't think Kyrie Irving was like, this is for Ben, knocking down shot. No chance. They were saying all the right things because he was getting sort of verbally abused by the Philly fan. But no, there's no question about it that they weren't playing for him. But nevertheless, I think he's too much of a risk. His first game with Brooklyn is going to be in the series. I don't think so. It's tempting because he's such a good defensive player, and you may need that kind of player when you get into this series down the stretch. But I don't know, man. I don't know. It's a real dilemma for Nash to have. He wants to survive this series, but I don't know if Ben Simmons coming on is the answer. But who knows? They might get that desperate. We'll be back for Hour 3 as we continue at Sports Map Radio. We'll be right back.